You have to definitely speak up. So 3, 2, 1. Hi, this is William Ramsey. Welcome to William Ramsey Investigates. Tonight we have a very special guest coming to us from Ireland. His name is Kieran Coggins, and he runs a blog on WordPress titled Cogzilla, G-O-G-G-Z-I-L-L-A. But what we're going to talk about tonight is a topic of particular interest in Ireland about a deep agent referenced as Steak Knife, spelled S-T-A-K-E-K-N-I-F-E, who was a deep agent in the IRA, and how that story influenced much of the political history of Ireland, and why that story is important today. So, Kieran, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Perfect. You're coming through very perfectly. If you keep that tone and that level of output, that'll be awesome. So maybe what we can do to get started is talk about your background in Ireland and how you became interested in this particular subject.
Okay, well, obviously I'm from an Irish background, Irish parentage. My family went over to Northern Ireland in 1969. Obviously, you know what happened there, so we left almost immediately. Went back around about 1988. And then I became interested in what was going on over here, specifically in the border region. I also went up to Belfast, where I lived for a few years. I met some people. Most of the people I met would have been on the Republican side, and I would have been involved in a few interviews, taking some photographs, very low-level sort of helping out. I left Northern Ireland after the ceasefire. It was 1994. I left at the end of 96, and I went back again around about 2001. Again, I was interested in the political situation, obviously now it's changed, because it was peacetime.
Right.
So, just to bring us up for the last sort of 20-odd years, I've been dabbling in and out of Northern Irish politics and some Southern Irish politics. I've been looking at this Steak Knife case because it struck me as being very interesting and very intertwined with what's going on. And as I mentioned to you briefly before we started recording, I divide Steak Knife into Steak Knife 1, which is what was actually happening at the time, and Steak Knife 2, which is what I call the Steak Knife industry. There's a whole industry which has grown up with an awful lot of misinformation, and most of the time the mainstream media over here just prints what the British government and the Irish government, to a lesser extent, would like to be putting into the public domain.
Right. So the government line of both sides of the border.
Yeah, I mean, the Dublin government pretty much does what the London Westminster administration tells it to do.
Gotcha. And so maybe we can talk about who allegedly is Steak Knife and why he was such an important agent to the British government.
Yes, indeed. Steak Knife, or the alleged identity of Steak Knife, is Freddy, which is Alfredo Scappaticci. Now, he's part of the very small Italian community in Belfast in Northern Ireland, and he's from a district called the Markets District, which is quite a poor area in the city centre, and it suffered quite a bit from 1969 onwards, because that was the focal point of a lot of loyalist murder gangs or whatever, and a lot of army intimidation, if you wish to put it that way. Scappaticci was at the edge, I suppose one could say, of the IRA, and he then became more and more important. He was given more and more tasks. The reason that he was important was he was actually a really sort of the head of, well, one could say the head of security, the head of internal security. He was tasked with dealing with informers or leaks, anything that could upset the balance of the IRA in terms of the security forces. What the IRA provisionals didn't know was that he'd been arrested and he'd been put under pressure. The police had said to him, look, you know, we can send you to jail. I think it was a fairly minor motoring offence. But they had him, you know, he was actually afraid of going into jail. He didn't want to go to jail. In the end, he actually was sent to jail because it was important for them. He was by now a British agent, or an alleged British agent.
Right. Just want to make that clear to the audience. These are allegations that he was Steak Knife, you know.
Well, yes.
And he's never admitted it.
Well, he's on a death list now, so whether he admits it or not doesn't really matter.
Okay.
The only point I would say is when people keep using the word alleged, why would an innocent man flee Northern Ireland, and why would he be now be, he's been put up by the MI5 or whatever in England, we believe. He was certainly in Italy at one point. He was certainly in Tenerife, which is a sort of redneck holiday resort in Spain.
Gotcha.
So fairly stupid places to hide an Irish person, apart from Italy, I suppose, because that's where his father's family was from.
Gotcha.
He has always denied it, but there seems to be an awful lot of evidence that's pointing towards the fact that he is in fact stateless.
Gotcha. And when he was the head of security for IRA, did that entail acts like recriminations, violence, and general under?
He was very, very clear. He would have basically, if you or somebody else were accused of being a spy or an informer, you would have been taken to a remote location and encouraged to confess. Now, that was done by torture. Obviously, there's only one way out, and that's to be executed. They didn't give you a slap on the wrist or tell you to sit on the naughty stuff. These guys were playing for keeps.
Mm-hmm.
So Scappaticci is certainly known to have been implicated in quite a few disappearances, would be the polite way of putting it.
Interesting. And it's important to state that Scappaticci is there in the northern part of Ireland that is the loyalist to the UK government while working supposedly as an IRA agent that the Irish Republican Army wants to reunite all the 32 counties of Ireland. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, just to give some additional information, if Scappaticci only really worked in the Belfast area, which is the largest city. Now, if you look at Belfast and you look at the surrounding area, it's a bit like a patchwork quilt. You've got, even in West Belfast, where you've been operating a lot of the time, you've got areas like the Shankill Road, which is solidly loyalist. It's very paramilitary. If you go a few blocks away, you've got the Falls Road, and that's the complete opposite. It's a hardline Republican nationalist area.
Right.
So you've got this sort of patchwork quilt of Belfast, where he was going around in charge of security in North, South, East, and West Belfast. There wasn't really much for him to do in East Belfast, because he was 99% loyalist. But he would have been throughout the rest of the city and the surrounding areas. And this is going to be an important point. He wasn't really in the west of the province. We'll come into this more fully later.
Gotcha. But also within the Northern Ireland community, there were very important distinctions between Protestants and Catholics, correct?
Yeah, well, I mean, probably Americans are used to just hearing the sectarian terms. Oh, it's, in fact, when I was in America once, some guy said to me, oh, it's like the Pope's army versus the Protestant army, and I'm Protestant. Well, it's not actually really done in terms of religion. It's very similar to Bosnia and to Cyprus. You have groups there which are defined in terms of religion. In Cyprus, it's Muslim and Greek Orthodox. But in Cyprus and in Northern Ireland, it just so happens that the Catholics happen to be Republicans, and that who are Greek Cypriot nationalists, and you've got the Turks who are Muslim. But it doesn't really come into being a religious conflict.
Gotcha.
It's the same in Bosnia. In Bosnia, religion was used as a sort of shorthand. People would say, well, I'm a Serb Orthodox, or I'm a Croat Roman Catholic. And then the Bosnians would say, well, I'm Bosnian Muslim.
Gotcha.
So we use those terms. It's far more a political prism that we need to look through, which is that you had Republicans. I mean, you could, very occasionally, there were Protestant Republicans. You know,
interesting, right. What do you think the breakdown in Northern Ireland is between Republicans and loyalists? Population.
It changes. I mean, I think at the last census, it was something like 49.9 versus 50.9.
Wow! So it was very much parity in parity.
Well, yeah. This depends, William. It depends on where you are, because if you're in, that's over the entire six counties.
Gotcha.
Now, if you're in, let's say, the border area, it's about 90% to 99% Republican nationalist. If you are in, if you go, for instance, to North Down, North Armagh, South Antrim, those areas in North Belfast, it's overwhelmingly the other way. There's a town called Carrickfergus. It is over 96% loyalist.
Interesting. Gotcha. Yeah, and when they have their own particular colors, right? So the loyalists identified with William of Orange, thus wearing orange or orangemen, right? And then what are the colors of the IRA?
Well, we do what we call the curbstone test, or the flag part of the if you're walking down the road and you see a lamppost, we call it the lamppost test. If somebody's got a green, white, and gold flag or green, white, and gold paint on the lamppost, that means you're in a Republican area.
Gotcha.
If it's red, white, and blue, then obviously the colors of the British flag are red, white, and blue, and you draw your own inferences. But we've got other things too, as like FGQ, FGP. There's various different swear words which are used to identify just which area you're in.
Gotcha. And that this conflict, I mean, when I was reading, kind of prepping for the interview, really was a low intensity conflict. There was a lot of violence between different parties. The kind of environment that Scappatini operated in, or Scappatici, sorry.
Yeah, Scappatici would have been obviously involved in what Frank Kitson called low intensity operations. The British were able to keep the lid on it, but they were doing so at an enormous cost. And it's arguable, did they actually win? Because although the IRA, I think the last intelligent document that came out before the ceasefire was that it could go on forever, but the IRA didn't have the manpower and the money to actually completely overturn the loyalist government or whatever, and the loyalists didn't have the manpower to be able to completely wipe out the IRA. So it was a stalemate situation.
Interesting. And so Scappatici, he's the security enforcer, and he operated supposedly within this environment for decades, correct?
I think so. I mean, obviously, when he began, he was quite low down, but after I think he was sent into jail, as I said, at one point, and he began his meteoric rise because he was being promoted and trusted, and it's literally like giving somebody the keys to the safe.
Interesting. So he was definitely one of the top members of the IRA.
Well, this is what happened with an awful lot of the murders that were going on. Were they actually being set up by the British Army, by the police, so that he could be kept safe? Obviously, they didn't want his identity known.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, because when I was thinking about the Scappatici situation, it reminded me of here in the States of Whitey Bulger, where he was a kind of a double agent. He's a mobster in Boston, but had political contacts and was FBI, used him as a confidential informant, and he would off his political rivals and they never get busted for it.
One of my favorite films is The Departed.
Yeah, great film, yeah.
And that obviously is a fictionalized account of Bulger.
Right, but there's a real truth to that. The fact that there's people on both sides, like there's this kind of Byzantine relationship with these different parties and who's the spy. I mean, I'm assuming that the UK is trying to run multiple operations within the IRA, while the IRA is doing the opposite as well, right?
What also happened was that you had what we could call a turf war, because you had MI5 who were responsible for the six counties, and you had MI6 who were responsible for the 26 counties. Now, obviously, if somebody crosses the border, which they do here every day all the time, it supposedly went from one particular agency to another. And they were very jealously guarding their own particular assets.
Oh, interesting.
Then you had the army and the police. Everyone seemed to want a slice of the pie.
Fascinating. So, yeah, so the MI5 is what? That's supposed to be internal, and MI6 is external intelligence, right?
That is correct. For the security community or whatever, if it's happening inside the UK, MI5. If it's any country abroad, it's MI6.
Gotcha. So what about Scappatici, what led up to his so-called exposure? How did that all happen?
Well, there's quite a bit of stuff in the public domain, so I won't go into too much detail or whatever, but it would appear that the newspapers got hold of something quite juicy and decided to run with it. And that was the point at which the army and the government and the police pulled the plug and got him out of there very quickly.
Gotcha. So
it's built in my mind.
Right. So it's indicative of something that, they wanted him removed. But who was the guy, Gary? What's the bearded guy from the IRA? There are pictures of Scappatici with him, and we've
Jerry
seen it.
Adams.
Jerry Adams. Yeah. He's been in the States and been with presidents as well. So it's pretty remarkable that he was right up there with these kind of well-known figures, at least in the States.
Well, I met Adams a few times, so he was the main player.
Right, number one. So, you know, the Scappaticci story hasn't ended. So he disappears, and what's happened since? You know, this why is it still important?
Well, an awful lot of law cases are now coming forward because people who had their family, a member of their family, executed or disappeared, whatever term one wishes to use, they're now thinking, well, the government was behind this, so let's sue the government.
Gotcha. So there's all kinds of civil suits in Northern Ireland against the UK for some of these deaths that are associated with Scappaticci.
Yes, and we also need to look at Operation Canova, which is okay. This new thing which has happened, whereby one of the chief constables in England has gone over there to look at legality, or I should say the illegality of what was going on, because crimes were committed, and if crimes were committed by, let's say, a member of the police, then that person has to stand trial. If crimes were committed by soldiers, they have to stand trial. Right. So the rule of law is now being used to it's really embarrassing for the government in Westminster, but it's being used to punish anyone that was propping up Scappaticci.
Fascinating. So it's kind of like in the Dirty War, it was they're kind of shining a light down on these things. How did Operation Canova get its name?
I'm not too sure. I think they have a list, and it's alphabetical.
Gotcha.
It could just as easily have been, I don't know, Operation Lime Tree or Operation Zulu.
Gotcha.
Just so happened that K came up.
Well, they're spending, I mean, it's a multi-million pound operation. They're spending a lot of money in this inquiry, correct?
That is correct. It is very expensive.
And so some of these lawsuits are for significant amounts of money, correct?
Again, that's correct, because, you know, God forbid somebody in your family was executed. Wouldn't you want a lot of money?
I think so. I mean, they have their own website. It says their website, Operation Canova, with a looking glass and investigation into the alleged activities of the person known as Steak Knife. So,
I didn't even bother contacting them because it's the police investigating the police. Now, I know an awful lot of people over here who trust Boucher, who's the guy that's doing the investigating. But as far as I'm concerned, he's an English policeman investigating Northern Irish policemen. So,
right. So it's kind of like same people beyond the line, you know, investigating each other. They're saying that Scappaticci was part of the provisional IRA. So was he part of a breakoff group of the IRA?
No, he would have been with the provisionals. He would have been with the main movement.
Main movement, okay. So provisional is synonymous with the main movement. And what's the break-off part of the IRA called?
Yeah, well, the dissident Republicans, I think the term used was Alphabet Army, which is CIRA, Continuity IRA, NIRA, gotcha. New IRA, who seem to be the biggest, and RIRA, Real IRA. And they're all vying for position.
And that's all in Gaelic, right?
No, IRA.
No, but I thought, were you using Irish words?
What's no.
Okay, sorry. Well, I misunderstood. Because I thought I was, when I was doing some research, I thought I saw the original Gaelic language being used in certain instances.
Well, if you want, I mean, I don't know if your listeners would be interested in learning Irish Gaelic.
Well, you never know.
Keep it in English.
Okay, that's good. So this Boucher, how long has Operation Canova been going on?
I think it's a couple of years now that it's been going on.
Gotcha.
It's still progressing.
Still, and is there any timeline on it, or is it just an open-ended investigation?
That's a good question, because we have quite a few inquiries over here which seem to just drag on. And, you know, perhaps the government are hoping that people will die of old age rather than actually get a settlement.
Fascinating. And do you think that Steak Knife was really involved in that much murder or political hire? I mean, has anything come out where they can tie him to directives from MI5 that to kill somebody?
Well, this is a good point, because they're not really going to have headed notepaper, you know, from MI5. Dear Freddy, could you please, dear State Knife, could you please go and kill Mr. Whatever at, you know, 2 o'clock tomorrow? But we are actually getting to a point. There's a very old phrase which I like, and it's called, there's a difference between what you know and what you can prove.
Right, that's a good
and
point.
Let me say to your listeners, that works both ways.
Right, so I mean, you have this guy doing inquiry with the secretive organization like MI5, who probably is not going to disclose. Probably all those documents are probably shredded, is my guess. You know, so I'd be surprised if he has access to a lot of those internal paperwork.
A good quote from an American about Britain was, "These are the people who are not allowed to read their history until 100 years after it's happened." You know, we have the 100-year rule over here. It's a sensitive document.
Right. Yeah. No, I do. So.
Constitution, we don't.
Right. So, I mean, there's still kind of inquiry. I mean, you directed me towards a journal of the Phoenix, the magazine with inside stories. They're still writing about Steak Knife.
Yes, this is what I call Steak Knife 2, or the Steak Knife industry, because there's an awful lot of misinformation that's been put out basically by the Westminster government. And Stormont is actually not sitting anymore, but that's the local government for Northern Ireland. Now, it was in people's vested interest, the powerful establishment, that their side of the story on Steak Knife is the only narrative that was being told. Of course, mainstream media doesn't have a monopoly anymore, so right. We're getting far more of a rounded picture.
Fascinating. And what does that rounded picture indicate?
It indicates that MI5 had used Scappatucci, that there was a dirty war going on, that there was collusion between the police in the north of Ireland and the Republic to murder people who were deemed to be a nuisance. One of them was a guy called Eddie Bulletin, but there were other people there who just got bumped off. There was a famous solicitor, a legal figure called Finucan, and he was shot dead. So if people came to the attention of the security forces, they got fat.
Wow. Yeah, it's remarkable. I mean, it just was like this low intensity conflict. I think I was reading that during the time, what did they call it? Locally, they called it the Troubles. I think 3,500 people were murdered or killed.
Yeah, about 3,300, in excess of 3,300, known colloquially as the Troubles.
Gotcha. And that was during what time frame?
Well, we would classify that from the summer of 1969 through to late 1994. There was another little spike a few years afterwards when the ceasefire ended, but it only ended very briefly. And then we've had peace, nominally we've had peace since then.
So what were the terms of the ceasefire that made it stick?
It's been called Sunningdale for slow learners. Sunningdale was held in 1973, and it was basically power sharing, that the two communities were told, you know, you're going to have to sit down and work together. And the loyalists didn't particularly want the Republicans getting, or the nationalists getting, anything.
Gotcha.
And they were just told, because of the military situation, well, we can't stay here forever, so you're going to have to cut a deal of some sort, which is what happened.
Gotcha. So it's relative peace for 20 years, 25 years. So Scappatucci is, did anybody know where he is presently? And do you think that he'll ever be brought up and investigated by any party, including this Operation Canova?
Well, he was investigated recently. Obviously he's under police protection. And he was caught with some sort of animal porn pictures or whatever. And he was up in court. And I think he got some sort of suspended sentence. So he's obviously being watched 24/7. And certainly the dissident Republicans, if they ever catch up with him, are going to kill him. So he doesn't have much of an outlook.
So he's marked. Yeah, he's marked. Do you think that he has a bounty on his head?
Oh, I would imagine so.
Yeah, so he had some kind of like weird bestiality stuff that they thought was so extreme that he got charged with some crime. Do you know what his kind of person, was he married? Did he have children? How did he operate within the IRA?
Well, I think he's got a wife. I'm not too sure about his family setup. All that happened was he joined, he was advanced, he went up the ladder and became the top sort of security person, and then was found out.
Gotcha. So, how's that simple? Where do you think that this kind of Scappatucci industry is going? Do you find that most people in Ireland, all 32 counties, are still fascinated by the story? And is it being read by the larger UK audience?
In the South, there's a bit of a sort of ennui, a bit of boredom about the whole Northern Irish issue. They're just fed up of it. But certainly in Northern Ireland, when I was up there interviewing people a few weeks ago, I had a premonition that the whole steak knife thing was going to blow up. And I was talking to people in West Belfast. I couldn't actually repeat the language over your airwaves, but it would have been very derogatory about, you know, the amount of damage that Scappaticci caused. I went and I talked to some people in the Italian community there. They were very embarrassed and upset about what happened. Certainly in England, it's a major news story because this is, as you say, the dirty war. It's a very good way of describing it. This is the dirtiest aspect of the dirty war.
Right, just all the murders, bombings. Him handing over these kind of Republican patriots probably does not sit well at all, you know.
Yeah, the other thing too was in at least one murder, they were allowing what we might term, you know, sort of small fish to be executed so that he could still keep his cover.
Gotcha. Do you know if he ever came under suspicion until those final days that he was? I mean, somebody had to figure out during that time that there was a leak from the IRA. Is that true?
Well, the IRA certainly from the late 1980s through to the early 1990s, the only time that I can talk with any sort of authority about it, they were absolutely paranoid about informers because that was, you know, missions were going down. People were being arrested or whatever, so somebody had to be seen.
Gotcha. And like their total objective, the IRA actually did an operation where they took a mortar round and tried to kill Thatcher, right?
I think it was John Major. There were several attempts. What happened was the Thatcher attempted assassination on Thatcher was at the Grand Hotel in Brighton, and they narrowly missed her. She apparently walked out of the bathroom at the last minute, and that's when the bomb went off.
Wow.
The mortar bomb thing was actually in Downing Street when John Major was Prime Minister immediately after Margaret Thatcher. And they basically had a mortar in the back of a car and it was fired into 10 Downing Street and again narrowly missed killing the entire cabinet.
Yeah, that's right. That was a remarkable operation. So, you know, it was very, it was a dirty war. So in your writing, you're still posting things presently about the whole Scappaticci industry, right?
That's correct, because I think we need to expose some of the people that have been making very lucrative livings by peddling Westminster and Whitehall's lies.
And what did those lies consist of?
Well, this is the whole thing about Steak Knife. Obviously, he's under wraps. He can't speak for himself. But people have been coming up, well, one particular person has stated that they handle Scappaticci. Now, if you cast your mind back, I did say that he only ever operated in the Belfast area on the east coast of Northern Ireland. This particular person was a filing clerk in the intelligence corps and was only ever detailed to work in the west of the province. There's absolutely no way that he would certainly have handled some bits of information, but he certainly didn't handle the spy.
Gotcha. But do you think that this is coming out as kind of a way to camouflage the acts of that he might even be an intelligence asset himself?
Well,
or is that too much?
I know for a fact that the guy that's been singing this false song about handling Scappaticci is on the MI5 payroll. I'm putting that in the public domain now. Okay?
Gotcha. Right, so that kind of makes sense. So there are these guys. There's a book that came out in 2012 that talked about Steak Knife as well. What are your thoughts on that?
If you give me the author's name, I can give you my reply.
Oh gosh,
Is it first? Greg Harkin?
Yes, that sounds right.
Yeah, Harkin, I'm not too down on.
Harkin and Hurst, yes, Greg Harkin, yeah. And Hurst.
Harkin is a journalist. You know, it's like me paying you to write something. You write it for me.
Sure.
Hurst is...
That's an offer, actually, if you want me to write something for me. If you want to pay me, I'll do that in a second.
Yeah. Well, you can pay me, will you?
Well, it works by the way, sure.
It works, yeah, as long as it's hard currency.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, getting back to Hurst, Ian Hurst was most memorably described to me as, quote, a Walter Mitty character, a dangerous Walter Mitty, unquote. Hurst was in the army. He was in the intelligence corps. He was got out of the Army, the Intelligence Corps. He's now trying to sue the Ministry of Defense and the government and just about anyone that moves. He built up a huge portfolio of property in France, Spain, and England, and he's involved in some far from legal activity.
Oh, interesting.
You have the electoral list in America, don't you? Obviously, you want to look up who's an elector in your district.
Right.
Now, can you buy those things?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, in Britain, you can. You can buy the electoral list. Now, there are some people, I'm sure it's the same in America, who are ex-directory. You know, they're not on that electoral list, and they're not on it for a reason. He will actually sell you back your own privacy. This is how he's making a living.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I've got some other juicy things as well, but I'm not going to go.
What's the gist of their position in the book? I mean, do they really cover a bunch of these I mean, they're using Steak Knife, Britain's secret agents, plural, in Ireland.
Yeah, well, there would have been more than one.
Mm-hmm.
But to use a fine old American expression, it's a bunch of baloney. It's this guy who claims to be the handler was not the handler. He's got some very dubious links with some bent. We would say, you say corrupt cops, we say bent.
Bent, right, yeah.
They're dirty police or whatever. So you're talking about people who cannot be trusted. The Leveson Inquiry, which I don't think you have an equivalent of in the States because you've got a constitution. The Leveson Inquiry was to do with, phone hacking and police collusion and various other different things. And Hearst was not called because Hearst was... The judge was trying to politely say, well, you're a liar, so we're not going to bother interviewing you.
Interesting. The Levinson was when they were phone hacking all the celebrities, right?
Yeah, that's the tip of the iceberg.
Right. In essence, that is correct. They were getting that fake information and publishing it, and the people didn't know how it was getting out to the public. Yeah. That was 4 or 5 years ago, maybe?
That's correct. There was a murder, and they'd actually sort of hacked into the phone of the girl that was murdered, and I think her dad. You know, obviously very private stuff.
Right.
Very harrowing. So some people lost their jobs over that. There was a great kerfuffle about what had happened.
Right. It was from one of the newspapers, right? They were the ones doing it. Or they were paying for it, right?
Well, this is another link to Scappaticci, because the News of the World was one of the big... It's a bit like, I don't know, the Tatler in America. It's one of these... It's a big scandal sheet.
Inquirer, yes.
Yeah. Sorry, the Inquirer.
Yeah.
And... It doesn't exist anymore, but it would have been published on Sundays, and it had all sorts of salacious stories about pop stars and politicians and what have you. But the editor for the Irish edition was a guy called Alex Marunchak, who has Ukrainian parents. Marunchak links to Hearst, and of course, as we know, Hearst claimed to be Scappaticci's handler, erroneously.
Do you have any idea who Scappaticci's handler was? Is that speculated?
I wouldn't be able to put a name in the public domain.
Gotcha.
I don't know. I mean, that would be probably somebody at the top of MI5.
Yeah, you just wrote about Marunchak like yesterday, I think, on your blog.
Marunchak's a journalist, and Marunchak would have been involved. I'm bringing Marunchak into this conversation because he was setting up Hearst and a few other people, a guy called Peter Keeley, who was a double agent, let's say. He was printing basically a lot of old nonsense about what was going on. So we have to look at characters such as Peter Keeley, who tangentially links to Scappaticci.
Gotcha. Fulton Keeley, you wrote about him. Yeah, it's just an incredible story that he was really involved in this whole Departed situation, getting people killed and... Do you think that he was well compensated for his activities on behalf of the loyalists or the UK government, Scappaticci?
I think this is one of the things that really annoys Scappaticci. And in fact, Fulton Keeley, to use his, he's got an alias, all of the people involved, even Martin McGartland, these guys sold out their own side and they sold it out very cheaply. They thought they were going to get a fantastic deal. They literally were ghosted from, you know, immediately from wherever they were living in Northern Ireland, put on a plane, and literally dumped in like a housing project somewhere.
Wow. So, yeah, they didn't end up in Hawaii on the Big Island like they do here. Here in the United States, if you join the Witness Protection Program, you get some decent, my understanding, you at least get a decent place to live.
Now, our Witness Protection people get places like Norfolk. You know, it's just flat and it's boring.
Boring, gotcha. Well, they say the largest concentration of people on the witness protection program is on the Big Island in Hawaii and near Kona or something like that. So they get sent off to Hawaii under an alias, all that stuff. So Scappaticci is going to have to live his life out and under UK protection, right, until it's over. Do you know how old he is now?
He's in his early 70s.
Gotcha.
I think he was born in 1946.
And what do you see, like, this Operation Canova uncovering? Do you think that it will, you know, really expose all of the misdeeds, or what are your thoughts?
I'm pretty pessimistic about Canova on a personal basis, but I've heard an awful lot of people from the nationalist community have said, well, you know, this guy Boucher has not covered up so far. He's actually caused an awful lot of, he's ruffled a lot of feathers. So he's been like,
so what feathers did he ruffle? Just some of the loyalist involvement in crimes as well?
It's not so much a loyalist thing, because the loyalist paramilitaries would have been put in jail. They came out of jail after the ceasefire, and they are now, quote, community leaders, unquote. So they're getting a small stipend, and they're still running their own little communities. But it doesn't seem to be much of a recompense when you consider that they didn't really get anything out of it in terms of their community. So we have to look at the various other issues that are involved.
Do you think that is there a significant ethnic difference between people in Northern Ireland than in the 26 other counties?
Well, that's a very good question. In terms of genetics or what?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, are there variation? I mean, you know, I think I'm just wondering if that's a part of the conflict comes from that they think they're different than each other, other than politically different or outlook different.
There is a Northern Irish Protestant culture which is different from either the Northern Irish or the Southern Irish Republican Catholic culture. So in that as soon as you go over to England, you're called a paddy, whether you're a Protestant or a Catholic or a Loyalist or a Republican. So the English just shrug their shoulders and can't make anything of the situation here.
Interesting. And what do you see as, like, the future? Do you think that this ceasefire will stick, or what's kind of the future of that situation? You say you're living right there on the border.
Yeah, I'm about 2 miles south. But my own personal view is that we need to wait 5 weeks for Brexit to kick in, because that's going to be really interesting.
So do you think that they'll actually will exit the European Union?
Well, what I think is that when Northern Irish people, let's say the Loyalist community or the Unionist community, when they realise how much money is going to go flowing out of their pockets, they may well decide that reunification is a good deal. Because it's not like 1920. People are not going to stop them going to church or speak their own language or whatever. So that they would actually get a very good deal from the Dublin government.
Interesting. So you think that Brexit may actually end up inadvertently into their reunification of Ireland?
Well, if we look at a map, I'm sure you have maps in America, you've got the border with Canada. Where do you draw a border if you're an island? The most sensible thing to do in Britain and Ireland are both islands. The most sensible thing to do is to draw it in the sea, because it's very, you know, very easy to patrol and keep safe. Once you start drawing it down the middle of the 311-mile border that we have here, which even at the height of the troubles could not be patrolled.
Interesting.
You know, dissident Republicans, if you send police and the army up to the border, you may as well paint a gigantic target, because that's going to be like heaven. It's going to be like every Christmas rolls into one.
So do you think the effects of Brexit will be different for the Republic as opposed to Northern Ireland?
Well, there's been quite a bit of stuff in the media over here, and I don't know if it's scaremongering or whatever, but we can't do anything until we see what everybody else is doing. So at the moment, everyone's twiddling their thumbs.
Interesting. And what's the Republic's kind of, are there really significant connections to continental Europe, or are you pretty independent economically?
Well, if you look at the size of Ireland and you look at its geographical position, it's obvious that England and Scotland and Wales are going to play a huge role. Now, we do obviously have ferries and various other transport links with, let's say, France, which is our nearest continental neighbour. Uh-huh. But 90% of the traffic goes through England, so it's ridiculous.
That's interesting. I mean, it's that whole Brexit is just going to be incredible if it goes through. I mean, is it really projected to go through? What happened in that last vote?
Well, all I can say at the last vote, Theresa May keeps losing votes. All I can say is, if it does not go through, there will probably be a civil war situation in England.
Interesting.
Because 17.5 million people voted to leave, and you're now getting people saying, oh, wait a minute, we want another vote. I mean, could you imagine what would happen in America if you just decided to cancel an election, if whether it was Trump or somebody else that had won the election?
Civil war. Civil war. Yeah, maybe. No. Not with America, not with guns and stuff like that. It would be a national, just an apocalypse. It would be off the charts. Well, we're at the 40-minute mark, Kieran. Is there anything that I missed or should have brought up in regards to Steak Knife?
No, I mean, I've just covered the whole thing about what I call the steak knife industry. The obvious thing at the beginning was to do with his culpability. I think he is steak knife. I think Scappaccucci is guilty. And then part two would have been looking at these various people that have been involved with some far from accurate accounts of what was going on with steak knife.
Gotcha. So you got to be careful where you get your information other than you and your blog at... It's Gogzilla, right? Goggzilla at WordPress.com, where people can look at all your postings, which go back to October of 2012. So you've definitely done some writing there. Other than that, where would you recommend people take a look? Would it be this other blog, The Phoenix?
Well, The Phoenix is actually a satirical magazine.
Oh.
They've got a very good, let's say, correspondent or whatever, guy who looks very closely. He's got very good links with certain people. He gets the inside line. So I would recommend Mr. Hush Hush. Okay?
Gotcha.
Not his real name, I don't think. So
my guess is the same, yeah.
Yeah, you know, The Phoenix is one of the very few publications that would actually print things which would discomfort the government here, certainly the government in Dublin. They aren't terribly fond of The Phoenix because it's a bit like we have a magazine called Private Eye in England. It's got nothing to do with private detectives. It's just called The Private Eye.
Gotcha.
And it's anything that will... it's satirical, and it's also... they do investigative journalism to a very high level.
Oh, interesting. So your blog, The Phoenix, anywhere else where people can get authentic, quality information about this steak knife?
The unfortunate thing about Steak Knife and Scappaccucci is that everyone has got their own song to sing or axe to grind. If you just look at the Republican blogs that are on there, if you look at, I think there's one called The 42, and there's various other blogs that are on there that are written about him. So just have a look on Google, see what takes your fancy.
Interesting. All right, Kieran Goggins at Cogzilla.com about Steak Knife, a.k.a. Freddie Scappaticci. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Okay, this is Godzilla signing out. Thank you.
Godzilla. All right, cool. All right, we just stopped recording, right?